Welcome to Study, Grow, Know, where we discuss theology, prophecy, and current political issues from a conservative biblical perspective. Here's your host, Dr. Fred DeRuvo.
All right, thank you for joining me. We are picking up where we left off last time with this particular slide, and this is from Daniel chapter 2, as you know. And by the way, if you can't see these that well, for those who are watching, going to be watching online here at sermonaudio.com/study-grow-know, I'm going to have these slides as a PDF along with this video uploaded so you can look at the slides as we go if you like. But verse 35 says, "Then was the iron, the clay, the brass, the silver, and the gold broken to pieces together and became like the chaff of the summer threshing floors. And the wind carried them away that no place was found for them. And the stone that smote the image became a great mountain and filled the entire earth. And the entire statue and all its remnants are completely destroyed, obliterated, blown away." This is the slide we left off on last time, and we're going to continue from there. And it's also interesting to note that this stone that blew all the other previous kingdoms away, represented by the iron, the clay, the brass, the silver, and the gold, all those kingdoms are totally gone, completely destroyed, and in their place, this stone that destroyed all of those previous kingdoms fills the earth. Now, obviously, this is talking about the millennial kingdom and of the reign of Christ. And, of course, that's what we look forward to, but we look forward to eternity future as well. And this millennial reign of Christ happens in man's or humanity's timeline. And then, once the millennial reign of Christ is over, that's when eternity begins and time stops, our timeline. Obviously, there's time in eternity. It's just measured differently. So, what we need to do here is... Okay. The next slide we're going to go to is this one. And this is verses 41 through 44 of Daniel 2. "And whereas thou sawest the feet and toes, part of the potter's clay and part of iron, the kingdom shall be divided. But there shall be in it of the strength of the iron, for as much as thou sawest the iron mixed with mired clay." Now, what the angel is telling Daniel here is what the very final human-led kingdom will look like before Christ returns. And then he gets into a little bit more detail here with verses 42, 43, and 44. "And as the 10 toes of the feet were part of iron and part of clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly broken." So, you know, you take clay and try to mix it with iron, it's not a good mix. It doesn't mix. It doesn't gel. It doesn't somehow mix up and become a completely different substance. As you can imagine, you try to put clay with iron, and the clay just simply sits on top of the iron. But the iron is brute force compared with the clay. So there's no way those two can absolutely mix. Like oil and water by themselves don't mix. They can be in the same container, but they really don't thoroughly mix. And this is the same thing that's going to happen with this final kingdom. And quite frankly, I believe we are moving toward that final kingdom right now. And I think over the last year that we've seen all of these things take place with the coronavirus pandemic, as we've been told, and everything that's happened with that, shutdowns, or even lockdowns if you prefer, social distancing, mask mandates, having to basically stay in your home. No one can go to church. You can't go to restaurants. So many businesses in America and throughout the world literally go bankrupt because of what happened. And I believe it's because the globalists, under the direction of Satan, were empowered and emboldened to move against the population of the world to bring about the major change that's needed to usher in this final kingdom. And think about this. How many thousands of years ago, 2, 3, 4,000 years ago, depending on when Daniel was written, this is when Daniel received these visions and these explanations about the visions that he received. And here we are, seeing it occur, I believe, in our day. Verse 43, "And whereas thou sawest iron mixed with miry clay, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men, but they shall not cleave one to another, even as iron is not mixed with clay." And verse 44, "And in the days of these kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left to other people, but it shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever." So what is verse 44 telling us? If you look at every other empire that has ever existed in the annals of history throughout the world, but even if you just take these four or five that Daniel chapter 2 is referring to, the Babylonian, the Medo-Persian, the Grecian, and then the Roman, and then what's to come next, the revised Roman Empire, all of those empires started off as something. The Assyrian Empire kind of gave way to the Babylonian Empire. The Babylonian Empire gave way to the Medo-Persian Empire. That empire gave way to the Grecian Empire. And Alexander was struck down in the prime of life through an illness at the age of roughly 30. And his huge kingdom was divided among his four generals. And then they further divided it among some of their high officers. And Antiochus Epiphanes and Antiochus Epiphanes IV were among those. So it's very, very interesting. This is telling us in verse 44 that God's kingdom, and in the days of these kings, that means when all these kingdoms have come and gone, and we're preparing for the last kingdom that's going to be fully global. Once these kings have lived through their God-appointed rulership, they will be gone, and they will be replaced with God's kingdom that will never be destroyed. Never be destroyed. And God's kingdom will never be left to anybody else. It shall not only not be left to anybody else, but it will do the breaking of all other kingdoms. So by the time we get to Christ's kingdom and the millennial reign, these other kingdoms will not even be a distant memory. They will be so far gone, they won't even be remembered anymore by anyone during the millennial kingdom. I think that's pretty fascinating. Well, let's keep going here. We're going to talk specifically about what is meant by iron. I touched on that. What is meant by iron mixed with miry clay? Well, iron, we know, is extremely strong stuff. It's what will go into the fabrication of some major buildings. They use iron as part of the skeletal structure. Iron and steel, they're used in cars. It's used to hold things up because of its strength and its brutality. When iron was first discovered and created, it was used for weaponry. So there's a great deal of strength to brutality that iron is used for. And it also represents, in this case, the imperial form of government that harkens back to the days of Rome. Theirs was a very brutal government. The Roman soldiers were known for their brutality. They were known for their hardness. They were known for their willingness and their actual enjoyment of being a warrior. They enjoyed it so much, and if they had a commanding officer whom they admired more than anyone else in the world and felt this tremendous loyalty, that they knew that that commanding officer would actually lead them into battle, not just tell them to go into battle, but he would lead them into battle, they would follow that commander anywhere. And many Roman soldiers of the day would basically, if they had a commander, with whom they felt such tremendous loyalty to, they would often voluntarily tattoo the name of that commander on their body, visibly, so people could see it. It was an advertisement. They were so proud of that. But the imperial form of the government of Rome was one that was known for its brutality. And we are going to see that again, to some extent and in some form, with the final world government that will come about. And as I said, I believe it's coming about now. Now, it's interesting in an imperial form of government. In an imperial form of government, the leaders are free to do whatever they want. They don't need to follow the laws that they create. In the Medo-Persian Empire, this was not the case. In the Medo-Persian Empire, the leaders were bound to follow the laws that were instituted during their time as leaders and rulers. And this is why, when Daniel was thrown into the lion's den, the ruler at that time in the Medo-Persian Empire had no other choice. He could not sit there and say, well, I'm going to give an exemption to Daniel. He couldn't do that. And we learn this later, of course, in the book of Daniel. But he couldn't do that. He had to follow the rules. Nebuchadnezzar, from the Babylonian Empire, did not have to follow his own rules. That was a form of imperialism. Alexander the Great did not necessarily have to follow his own particular set of rules. Rome stepped it up even further, because they not only had to not follow, they could do whatever they wanted, but their brutality knew no end. So the leaders were free to do whatever they wish. That's representative of the iron part. The clay. The clay is obviously weaker, because it gives more rule to the people. So you have this brutality, this iron, this tremendous strength, and they're trying to soften it a little bit. That's what it seems like Scripture is saying. They're trying to soften it by allowing the people to have some input. So we're not just going to be a dictatorship, which is what imperialism is. We're going to at least have the appearance of allowing people that we rule over to have a say in what happens in the government. So clay is a bit weaker, and this is what really keeps this last empire from totally coalescing. Because instead of being just brutal, just fascist, just a dictatorship, they try to soften it by trying to include people in the decision-making process, which actually serves to weaken this form of government. It doesn't make it stronger, it weakens this form. The leaders in a clay type of society are more limited. Effectively, that's what the United States could be or should be, because the Constitution limits the powers of the government. But unfortunately, over the past number of decades, even going back as far as Reagan or before, maybe we should go back to Woodrow Wilson, they started chipping away at the Constitution and giving the government more power. So ever since Woodrow Wilson on forward, and certainly very excessively in recent decades, the government has gained tremendous power. And honestly, I believe that's what this whole coronavirus 19 situation has been. It has given the government, and actually they've taken it, it has provided for the government nearly unlimited powers to shut down society, take away our freedoms, to tell people what they can and can't do, all under the guise of keeping us safe. And the truth of the matter is, none of what they've been telling us is really keeping us safe. And more doctors are actually coming out and commenting, and they're alarmed about what's happened. But the government has used this, I believe, as an excuse to gain more power. And once the government gains more power, they never give it back. It's like the income tax was supposed to be temporary, just for the duration of the war. Okay, well, which war? We still are paying income tax. we are still paying income tax. It was supposed to be temporary. And before income taxes were collected, the government seemed to have plenty of money to do plenty of things, infrastructure and everything else. But then they got on this idea, well, we need more money. How are we going to do this? Well, we'll institute a temporary income tax. And all of a sudden, that became a permanent thing. So the government never gives back what it takes. Even though right now they're trying to make us think like they're giving us some money back, it's our money to begin with. They're not really giving us much. When you talk about a $2 trillion package that they just passed and each person gets $1,400, well, that doesn't even amount to, you know, that's such a paltry amount compared to the whole package. But anyway, leaders are more limited in a clay type of environment or government, and they must operate under checks and balances. And again, that's what, of course, the United States is. We have three branches of government. We have the legislative branch, we have the executive branch, and then we have the judicial branch, as I'm sure you know. And each of those branches cannot work autonomously, and they offer checks and balances. But in the last decade or two especially, that's been really skewed. And now we have even more of that happening. So it's almost like the checks and balances are kind of gone. And we're seeing much more, at least in the United States, of this clay dissolving and moving toward this. And more of an iron, brutal strength type of dictatorship. And that's not happening just in the United States, by the way. That's happening as far away as Australia and Europe and Asia and Ireland and Canada and many other, all nations. I don't know that any nation is not affected by what's going on today. So the iron and the clay could also represent a mix of a numerous types of governments. And again, this is the final empire that I believe the world is moving toward. The Roman Empire never consisted of a combination of imperial rule and democracy at the same time. It was always democracy. Always democracy. People have an increasing voice in the government over time, but when Rome started, it was started as an imperial form of government, even though it had a Senate. So these passages speak, the ones I just read a few minutes ago, they speak of a revised Roman Empire that is still yet future. And that's, you know, a continuation, really. Some people say that, well, there's five empires in Daniel 2. There's really four, because the fourth empire is Rome. It's going to be the revised. It never really went away. It's still with us to some form. And we see parts of that over in Europe right now, where the old Roman Empire was. So the Roman Empire is the fourth kingdom, and it's going to revise itself to be completely filling the entire world. So is it really a continuation of the fourth Roman Empire, or is it a fifth empire as a brand new one? Well, in many ways, it's a continuation of the fourth Roman Empire, but since it's going to be a global empire, like Rome was a global, then known world global, and all the empires before it were then known world global empires. So we're talking about an upcoming final global empire that will be literally a revised Roman Empire. So in a sense, it's a continuation, but we can also say it's a fifth global empire. So the passage tells us that this kingdom will not cease to exist until it is fully destroyed by Jesus at his physical return. Now, there's going to be some major problems within this coming kingdom, as we'll get into eventually, especially in the book of Revelation. And we've got Joel and so many books of the Bible that talk about what is going to be entailed in this kingdom. But I think John, the apostle, in the book of Revelation, under the inspiration and guidance of the Spirit, pulls from so many different sources of the Old Testament, and he puts it all together for us in one book. So that's going to be our main book that we're going to be referring to. But it's interesting to note that this kingdom is allowed to exist by God himself, and it will only stop existing when Jesus returns to physically destroy it. God will allow it to continue in spite of its problems, in spite of its, all of its internal the problems that crop up, and in spite of the fact that people turn on each other, in spite of the fact that there will be at least one, if not two, or more wars throughout the seven-year tribulation when this particular fifth global Roman Empire exists, it's not going to be destroyed. God Himself has the honor of destroying this kingdom. The old Roman Empire signified the two legs. You remember the statue. It was the statue that we had put up here a few weeks ago, or last time we did a lesson, and the time before that, where the head was a Babylonian, then you had the arms and the chest was of the Medo-Persians, and you'll notice the arms, there were two. Well, the Medes and the Persians together created two, created one empire. After that, you had the waist, and that was the one empire of Alexander, and then you had the two legs. The two legs of iron is what eventually happened with the Roman Empire, and we're aware of that. In the 3rd century, it was under Constantine, it became these two empires. It started to, and then eventually it lasted for hundreds of years, but it started to just fall and break apart and went into two pieces. So the two legs of iron represent the old Roman Empire, the East and the West, and the feet and toes are the remnants of the old Roman Empire, and they will exist in the end times. And it is fascinating, you probably can't see this, but it says, this will finally be destroyed and consumed by God's kingdom. So when that stone that the builders rejected, the stone that was made without hands, when that stone comes back to this earth, where does that stone strike? That stone strikes the feet, because that's the only part of that final statues of empires that exists. That's where God in Christ strikes that particular statue and destroys it. And He destroys it so badly, so well, that nothing is left of it. Now, verses 26, it says, and after 62 weeks shall Messiah be cut off. This is an interesting one. We have jumped, by the way, to, let me get to where we are. This is actually Daniel 9 right now. After 62 weeks shall Messiah be cut off, but not for himself. And the people of the prince that shall come shall destroy the city and the sanctuary, and the end thereof shall be with a flood. And unto the end of the war, desolations are determined. Now, the next verse, right after that, verse 27, and you'll recall this is verse 9, this is chapter 9, where the angel comes and he explains to Daniel all of what Daniel was concerned about. Not that Daniel understood it. Matter of fact, at one point, Daniel was told, you know what? Seal up the book. It's essentially for those living in the latter days, in the end times. So there's no way Daniel could have understood all this. But starting with verse 20 in chapter 9, it talks about the 70 weeks prophecy. And this is part of that. So 26 and 27 is very, very interesting. Verse 27 says, and he shall confirm the covenant with many for 1 week, and in the midst of the week, he shall cause the sacrifice and the oblation to cease, and for the overspreading of abominations, he shall make it desolate even until the consummation, and that determined shall be poured out upon the desolate. Daniel 9, 26 and 27. And it's very fascinating. Now, some people have a problem with the week here, or the midst of the week, or after 62 weeks. Well, the entire chapter of Daniel 9 is dealing with weeks. And so this is where we get the weeks. The context is in weeks. And it is basically saying, basically the first part of chapter 9 is Daniel praying. When we get to verse 20, He says, now while I was speaking, praying, and confessing my sin and the sin of my people Israel, and presenting my supplication before the Lord my God for the holy mountain of my God, yes, while I was in prayer, the man Gabriel. So Gabriel comes to him, and he basically explains to him, starting with verse 24, 70 weeks are determined. Now this goes all the way back to the amount of time that Israel had not observed the Jubilees and the Sabbaths and all that. There were 70 times that they missed these things. But it was 70 times the amount of years that they missed it, and it adds up to 70 weeks, and we'll get into that to explain that a bit more. But I want to talk about this real briefly. And how long have I been going?
We started at 8:04, so you're good.
Okay. I'll wrap this up soon for this particular lesson. But Daniel, it's interesting to note, identifies the Antichrist in this passage. You'll remember it said, and the people of the prince that shall come shall destroy the city and the sanctuary. Well, that can only mean one thing, although there are many interpretations to it, but it really only means one thing. So Daniel identifies the Antichrist in this passage in verse 26. The people of the prince that shall come shall destroy. Well, what is that even talking about? Well, the people here, I believe, refer to the Roman soldiers who destroyed Jerusalem in AD 70. We're talking about a destruction that took place. So what happened in AD 70? Jesus foretold of this before he died. In AD 70, roughly 35, 40 years after Jesus lived and died and rose again, the Roman soldiers surrounded Jerusalem under, I believe, Titus, and under his leadership, they destroyed Jerusalem. And, yes, General Titus. And what's interesting is, many people today believe that the Antichrist is going to be a Muslim. He's going to rise from a Muslim country. But really, the people of the prince that shall come. So we're doing two things here. We're looking way into the future, and we're looking into a nearer future. The nearer future is when Rome was destroyed. And the far future, even in front of us, is this prince who has a connection to these people, the Romans, the Caucasian Europeans, the people in Europe who are Gentile, but not necessarily Muslims. Jews will not necessarily bow to or agree to anything with a Muslim leader. And that's important to know. So the Antichrist was referenced by Daniel in chapter 9. And the Antichrist will most likely be of Roman descent. It is possible that he is part Arab or has some Arab blood in him. But he will be certainly a moderate-looking individual who does not look distinctly Arab as many Arabs do. He may also be Jewish. That's very, very possible. It's very possible. Because, of course, Jews would listen to another Jew who comes on the scene and touts himself to be someone who can do something for them. He will definitely, though, align himself with Muslim nations. And by the way, let me just interject here. I don't have it on my slides, but in the last week or so, I have found this very interesting, and I've written articles about this at studygrowknowblog.com, and I put those same articles and audios on sermonaudio.com/studygrowknow. What I've learned is that all of a sudden, out of the blue, major Arab groups, major Muslim Arab groups are downplaying the importance of the Temple Mount. They're actually coming out and saying, look, the Temple Mount isn't really important to us. What's important to us are the other sites in Muslim lore. Medina, for instance. So, Jerusalem, there was one individual from Morocco who even tweeted out for his group that Jerusalem is really the home for the Jews. And the Temple Mount is theirs. And we know that that's exactly what it says on paper when the Six-Day War ended and Moshe Dayan led his troops into Jerusalem and united Jerusalem for the first time in years, decades. And then on paper, Jerusalem, Jewish people, Israel, have control of the Temple Mount. But they left it in the hands of Muslim security forces because they didn't want to upset the apple cart. So that's been happening. And we'll have to see where that goes. And then we have the Abraham Accords, which are also taking place. And more Muslim nations are actually signing on with Israel to be part of that accord. So a lot of things are happening. But it's interesting that Muslims have their own prophecies about their coming Mahdi. They call him the final Mahdi, M-A-H-D-I, which, of course, Christians believe is none other than the Antichrist. New Agers, the New Age movement, also has a coming Messiah, and it'll be this person. They don't know that yet. So it's very interesting the way Satan has infiltrated all these non-Christian groups, Muslims, or Islam, I should say, New Age movement, and so many others, and they all look forward to a coming type of Messiah that will lead the globe onto higher levels of a spiritual plane. I can't even read that.
He's their final imam.
Okay. Thank you. The Antichrist is the final imam that Islam is looking forward to. Now, the European Union was thought to be a contender for this, but the European Union is actually falling apart. But no worries, because leaders over there have another idea in mind. Sarkozy, the French president before current Macron, was talking about the Mediterranean. The current president, Macron, envision something else. So even if this falls apart, it'll be replaced with something else. Something will happen that will allow the Jewish temple to be built, as Paul implies in 2 Thessalonians 2, 3, and 4, where he says that this man of sin will waltz into the Holy of Holies and will set himself up to be God. For that to happen, there needs to be some form of a temple that has at least the Holy of Holies and the Holiest of All, and then other accoutrements around the outside of it. It doesn't have to be huge. It doesn't have to be huge. It just has to exist. And so that's what Paul is implying in 2 Thessalonians 2, 3, and 4. Interestingly enough, as I mentioned, Macron began pushing for a 10-federation union like the EU with their own defense force, and that's what he's pushing for now. He really wants Europe, this 10-federation union, to have its own defense force. He wants it to have its own military, its own autonomy, its own everything. So it'll be interesting to see what really happens here. Now, with President Biden in the Oval Office, things are starting to happen in the Middle East, China, Taiwan, and elsewhere, and I'm not going to get into it. I'm sure you read the papers or you listen to your favorite news program or whatever, so you know as well as I what is happening. So we are going to actually stop right now, and we are going to pick up next time, and hopefully it'll be a little bit quicker than what between this one and the last one. We're going to start with Ezekiel 37 next time. So I would suggest, just a suggestion, if you can, read the entirety of chapter 37 of Ezekiel. And while you're at it, read chapter 38 through 39, which talks about the northern invasion. But I hope you gain something from this. There's so much happening in the world today, it's difficult to cover it. It really, really is. But these are highlights of what God is determined is going to occur, what He's going to bring about, and we'll just have to see. I want to end, before I go to prayer, with Isaiah 41:10. It's one of my favorite verses, and I've been repeating it to myself a lot. And of course, if you're familiar with it, it goes, "Fear not, for I am with you. Be not dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you. I will help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand. And I believe that we need to allow scripture like that to just permeate our being. Because God is communicating truth to us. And that truth needs to impact us. It can't just stay up here in our head. It has to impact us. So may the Lord do that. Let's close in a word of prayer. Father, thank you for your word. Thank you for your promises to us. Thank you for truth. We don't have to go by feelings. We can just open your word, and there is truth. I pray that in the days coming, we will throw ourselves on you. We will seek your face every day, and we will commit ourselves to you anew, daily, so that you can work in and through us. Help us not to be afraid. Help us not to fear. Help us not to be dismayed at what's happening in this world. You foretold this a long time ago. Help us to focus on the fact that you are our God. That you will strengthen. You will help. And you will uphold us. That doesn't mean we're going to be free of consternation or difficult or trying circumstances. What it means is that you will uphold us and help us and give us strength in the midst of those trying situations. So we claim those promises. And we trust you to do your work in us and through us as we seek to fulfill the Great Commission of Matthew 28. Thank you for being with us. May we bless and glorify you in our lives. In Christ's name, amen.
You've been listening to Study, Grow, Know with Dr. Fred DeRuvo. Please join us each week for new broadcasts that deal with theology, prophecy, and political issues from a biblical, conservative perspective.